Get ready for conflicts where movie reviews collide.
Hello all and welcome to Conflicts the Podcast. Today, drumroll please, Oh, thanks guys, you actually drumrolled. I feel so special. Today, we are covering, wait for it, season 8 of Game of Thrones.
Dun 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 dun.
Okay, we timed that really good. That was really good.
Hey, is that a cease and desist order from HBO that just showed up on our table?
Oh my God, are the HBO snipers here?
Well, we're not Donald Trump, so they're not going to sue us.
That's true. Hopefully.
Oh my God, imagine if they did. That's so much free publicity. Let's try and get HBO to sue us.
You know, let's not.
That's
a terrible
Rich
idea.
Rich is like, as the owner of this LLC, please stop.
Yeah. All
publicity is good publicity.
You know, the bright side is if they sued the company for everything it had.
It ain't much.
It's not a lot.
I normally kind of give you guys a synopsis of what we're going to cover, but let's face it, it's season 8 of Game of Thrones. If you have social media, if you exist in the world or looked at a magazine in a checkout line, you know what we're talking about. So we're going to focus today on the final season, but we're going to be referencing the entire series because there's too much not to. We're just going to be rating the last one, but we're going to hear things from all seasons. So this is your spoiler warning. If you haven't watched Game of Thrones, A, what's wrong with you? And B, stop listening. Go watch it and then come back and listen. That last part's key. All right.
Yes, please.
Please do. Also, you know, rate, review, subscribe because you love us. Please.
we don't sound desperate at all. No, please, listeners, please.
Please, dear listener, please, rate my podcast. All right. You know what? Let's just dive off the deep end. Nicholas. Oh, hey, you know what? Introductions are fun. If this is your first time listening, let's introduce ourselves. My name is Laura. They will sometimes refer to me as Lulu. Just know I'm one and the same. I don't have split personalities. We also have our reviewer. Nick is looking at me like, are you sure? Because you a little crazy. You know what? Shut up. We don't talk about it. All right. And we have our reviewers. We have Nick. Say hey, Nick.
Hello.
And we have Rich. Say hey, Rich.
Hey, Rich.
Thanks, dad joke. All right. They are going to be giving you their ratings. And then I'm going to give you my rating. And then we're all going to talk about it. And you're going to care.
Yes, you are. You have no choice.
Yeah, exactly. We're that good. All right. Nick, dive off the deep end. Rate just the final season of Game of Thrones.
I give it an F+.
Ooh. Ooh, is an F+ a thing? Or
it is
just
in my world. Like in like, I'm probably in like first through sixth grade. It is, so I'm going for that.
So not quite a total fail. It's like a fail like with a wink. Like you failed, but good try.
You just get the sticker, not the scratch and sniff.
So many jokes right there. I mean.
All right. No justifications. No nothing else. We just know your rating. F+.
Yep.
All right, Rich. Final season of Game of Thrones. Give it a grade.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and I guess I'm more generous than Nick, but I'm going to give it a C-.
Okay. C-. Average, but below average. Could have done better.
Yeah. I'll explain that in a minute, but yeah, that's what I'm going with.
I'll explain mine in a minute as well.
You know what?
I think yours requires a little less explanation.
Oh, man.
We usually have them kind of justify their ratings and then kind of go from there. I say let's just free for all. You guys go.
Mm.
All right, Nick, go ahead. Come on. I want to hear your F+.
Okay. So I've already said this once before. We've invested technically nine, yeah, because we had a year off. They pulled a Sopranos on us and took a year off to make this. What was supposed to be a masterpiece. Although, I do give them this credit. They started rocking on their own writing because they're like, there's no more books. I'm just going to write my own material.
Mm-hmm.
Shoo.
He just made a face like he was smelling dog poop on his shoe for you folks who can't see his face.
Honestly, I am so scared that the writers of this show are going to take on Star Wars, because I love Star Wars. I'm scared now because they started off strong, even up to season 7. Mm-mm. I've even told both of you guys this outside. Whenever you were like, oh, let's do a review of Game of Thrones season 8. And I'm like, I really don't want to.
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Because I don't want to talk about it.
I seriously feel, I'm going to say it, I feel like I trusted a fart.
Oh, never trust a fart, bro.
See, that's how I feel about the last Star Wars movie.
Well, then it's
Star
perfect.
Star Wars is for another
You know
day.
What, then? They have the perfect writers for the next trilogy because yeah, this is it.
That's not leaving me with a lot of faith here. I'm just
because
saying.
It's this show. I want my 9 years back. because I have zero rewatch value out of this show.
Okay, but you hated it. Why?
Here we
Besides
go.
Besides the writing.
Here we go. All right. Episode
dun, dun,
one.
Rich, chime dun, in and dun, tell him dun, when he's dun, wrong. Dun, 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 dun,
Again, we can't say, hey, this wasn't like the book, because we don't know what the book's going to be like. And I've never read the books. I'm just going off of pure awesomeness of the show, of what it was. What it was.
Of what the show once was.
Yes. You know what? I'm going to skip the first two episodes. Because those were just, you know, builders and story filler.
They were the DM.
They were, but I do have a problem with that. As much as I didn't dislike the episodes individually, we knew going in there's only 6 episodes.
Correct.
So we knew a third of the season seemed filler in a mm-hmm. very truncated season already. And I left feeling wanting on those for two reasons. Number one, because I expected this to be action-packed. There's a lot more. And number two, because it seemed like way too much fan service for this show to put into 2 episodes.
There was a lot of blatant fan service.
Like, there's a lot of happy, good feelings going on here.
I mean,
and the only reason why I'm skipping the first 2 filler episodes, because I feel like they spent on the original first 7
seasons,
thank you. There was such good story buildup, mm-hmm. and they failed to hit that mark in this season hard. Because they left us hanging in season 7 with Danny and John getting mm-hmm. it on. We knew that that was his aunt.
We knew about the incest. They didn't.
They did not. And then whenever they found out about it, they just kept going like it was, you know, NBD. Which, and
they did not. I disagree, sir.
In his defense, I'm from Arkansas. If I found out that was my aunt, I'd probably still date her too, because she's hot.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, I would too. But I was also born in Arkansas, so.
A beautiful, beautiful person.
So is Jon Snow.
You know, though, to be fair, I'll go back and throw a little book thing in there. You know, the Targaryens have a long history of.
That's how they get crazy.
Of the incest there. There's quite a bit of that in their history. So, you know, you have to view it in that context. You look at the Romans, there was a lot of that happened there too.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I condone it, just saying that, you know, if you're looking back at history, there's a lot of precedence here.
Well, of the incest in the show, it is the most understandable.
Right.
They fell in love and hooked up having no idea that they were related. And what are the flipping odds
right.
that that's going to be his aunt? And if I meet somebody, fall madly in love, and feel like they're my other half, and then find out that they are related to my parents, and me, obviously, I'm probably going to be like, let's find a way to make this work and never tell anyone.
I'll need to look it up, but there is actually it's an identifiable condition where family members who have been separated, especially like children who are separated at birth mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. have been apart for a long time, they have a higher chance of, if they do meet later in life, of being attracted. And this is something that's been studied, it's been identified. And in many of those there's actually a lot of situations where that has happened.
Yeah.
So there is something about that that causes them to somewhat be attracted to each other. They just, you know, when you grow up, you tend to, it's like we're family.
Well, you have a draw and a connection to a mm-hmm. person, and not understanding that that is a familial draw
right.
or connection, mm-hmm. you mistake it for a romantic. That would be logical.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, this is actually something that it is an identifiable effect that happens in nature, and I say that meaning humans as well. So, you know, it's not completely unbelievable that something like that could happen because, mm-hmm. you know, it's been observed before.
Yeah. So I thought those first two episodes were good. I would rate them higher because mm-hmm. they did a decent job.
So it's like a roller coaster and it started up on a high note and mm-hmm. then started falling for you.
But the fall is like that big roller coaster. And then all of a sudden you have that fake out hill. Mm-hmm. That's what this whole season yeah. was. Well,
was a fake out hill.
Well, see, I don't think you can just breeze on past the fact that after the first two episodes, like it did build some tension because everybody's thinking, oh, it's been nice for a long time. Nobody died yet. Episode three is going to be a bloodbath.
I thought there was going to be no one left after season three. Like I had a buddy of mine had bets going with people mm-hmm. at work who was going to be left alive. I had five people that I thought were going to be left alive.
Game of Thrones has a history of giving you something and building a connection with somebody and then taking them away. That's one of the things that it was built on. So then when you get two episodes that build that much and give you that much, you're thinking, they're about to take all this away from me.
That's right. And they do.
Well, they did. I mean, they don't. You know,
I'm going to hit that in just a second. So then we get to the long night. Episode 3.
I'm sorry, I didn't see that episode.
Yeah, same here.
No, nobody did because you couldn't, even though we're staring at the TV screen.
Super valid, though.
I literally closed curtains, shut off all the lights. We're just trying to adjust the TV screen and, I mean, everything. And the whole time I'm like, I see nothing. I see nothing.
Yeah, and their defense was like, oh, if you had an OLED TV, you could have seen it. Those are $5,000.
Well, screw you.
You know
my
what?
My TV's fine.
If you had my foot up your ass, you'd have felt it. So that's my response. Who are you giving
this
to?
Not to mention, okay, I understand this is going to be the greatest battle ever, you know, put on film, longest whatever. They work so hard. I don't want to discredit anybody's hard work. But it's not the first time we've seen a night battle, okay? Like, if it's going to be the first, we're going to do this battle at night. It's going to be so cool. Like, dear God, when do they have battles during the day? Battle of the Bastards was like in the day. All like Battle of Blackwater.
Well, I mean,
in the dark.
It was the long night. But here I'm gonna take that a different place because they knew that they were going to be battling at night because at this point there was nothing but night. There wasn't going to be a dawn until the undead are gone. They knew this. So if you're going to have a battle at night, even during that time period, you're going to create light. You're going to have extra light for different things. Because, you know, I could probably rant for an hour alone on the battle itself because all of these brilliant tacticians did the dumbest crap ever. I mean, mm-hmm. there was no tactical sense used whatsoever. You know, for example, you should have had barricades in stages that are staggered, and some of them should have been lit afire or been able to be lit afire during the battle. Now, here's why. Not only do the barricades slow them down, the fire makes them more visible. Also, those are range markers for your archers. So the field that they're coming in at, because we all knew where they were coming in at, should have had that all in place well ahead of time. This just makes tactical sense.
Dude, if we ever go to war, I'm hiring Rich. Like, well, I haven't thought of any of that
like,
stuff.
The problem with me, they didn't, what is it called, a volley of arrows?
Yeah, like, I mean, you could yes. say a volley, yeah.
So they didn't start off, I learned that from Lord of the Rings. Okay, so, or Twin Towers. They started off with the volley of arrows. They could have had it with dragon glass and lit on fire. They didn't do any of that. Instead, they send the Dothraki in to get...
In the dark.
They sacrificed the Dothraki because apparently the swords looked cool in the dark. I don't...
Yeah.
See, here's what they should have done. I'll go ahead and give you my tactical analysis very quickly. I told you about how they should have the barricades, and there should have been distance between each set of barricades. And then what you do is you have a frontline force. You take your heavy infantry. Back behind them, you have archers staged back a little further so they can be thrown the volley. And then your artillery should have been mm-hmm. on the other side of the freaking castle, not out in front of the damn moat. They should have been back there, hammering them from a distance, shooting the flaming balls, because once again, now they're lighting them up and you can see them. So what happens is your infantry creates a front a front line. Now your infantry tries to retreat, does a tactical retreat, while the Dothraki sweep in from the side, while the entire time your archers are volleying, you know, sending volleys of arrows in until the Dothraki hit. Then the archers use that opportunity to fall back to the next set of barricades.
Seriously, General, then, that's it.
Well, then your infantry goes back to the next set of barricades, rinse and repeat.
The only reason why Rich knows all this is because he grew up playing Risk and D&D. So, of course, he's going to be like, all right, here we go.
That makes
I
sense.
I really like military history, and I'm not going to say I have academically studied it, but I have done a fair amount of reading
right.
on military
Sidebar,
history.
Sidebar, if Game of Thrones Risk exists, I would like to have
I think
it play
it. Does.
If it doesn't, it really needs to.
It should. Let's patent that now.
My point being, though, that even if they'd used different tactics than the one I described, mm-hmm. I'd have liked to have seen some tactics other than we're just going to stand here and let them kill us. We're going to waste the Dothraki. We're going to be really stupid about everything else. And, you know,
it was the worst planning ever. It was just horrible. And then
I was just pissed I couldn't see anything.
They were in a crypt to save the women and children.
No,
with a guy who can raise the dead.
Yeah, this is a great idea. Well, and then
I thought that from the beginning. As soon as they were down there and the Night King shows up, I'm like,
well, and
he
I
can
just,
raise the dead.
I feel like, okay, we have Sansa and we have Tyrion, who are both down there and who are both the two smartest people in Westeros. Mm-hmm. And neither one of them is like, you know, these are all dead people around us, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I felt that way about Bran, because Bran is essentially at this point in time the world's best intelligence officer.
No, Bran's a cardboard cutout.
Well, no. Yeah, well. But he should have been like, here's where the troops are. Here's what they're doing. Here's where the dragon is, because he can see all that crap.
But he's going to sit there and be like, I was mm-hmm. there exactly where you needed me to be. And that's all he says the whole time. And I'm like, oh my God, you... Mm.
Like, don't get me wrong, I love the character of Bran, but, like, the thing I was most pissed about was in episode 2 when Tyrion goes over to him and asks to tell his story, and then the camera cuts away. Like, that's the scene I want to see. I want to see Bran and Tyrion together talking about things, making it more intellectual. No, we don't even get to see it. Like, what?
It was horrible.
Well, Tyrion... I mean, he was one of my favorite characters up until season 8. And then season 8, he is no longer...
You watch your mouth, sir.
He's no longer cunning in season 8. He's just... Am I triggering Lulu right now?
I'm also a little bit in love with Peter Dinklage, so it's fine.
No, he's great. He's great. And I mean, because he did do some really good acting. But from a standpoint of what his character did, I think he was far less... clever than he ever had been in the past.
He was very afraid. There's an army of the dead. They had 130,000 troops. They only had 18,000 troops at Winterfell. Combined forces. Okay, he wasn't on his A game. Don't shit on Tyrion.
I won't blame Peter Dinklage for it.
Oh no.
Honestly,
even though as craptastic as this season was, he was still a phenomenal actor. All of them were.
The acting in general was amazing.
No one can fault any performance in this season, you know, from background players.
Even like Lena Headey, who actually she got like 5 minutes in this whole season.
Got paid $1 million to stand there and drink wine. That's my favorite meme.
You know, pretty much. But
woman's a genius.
Even the little parts that they gave her, I thought she acted really well. She put a lot into it. So, you know, kudos to her. And I feel that way pretty much about everybody in the cast for this season. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, it wasn't their fault. It really wasn't. What else you got, Nick? Come on,
well,
hit me with it. Hit me with it.
So I'm going to skip. No, I'm not, actually. I'm going to go on to The Last of the Starks.
That is...
That's the episode right after The Long Night,
okay,
whenever John brings back up
when everybody
to
gets drunk.
No, that was in Longest Hour. Or The Long Night. When they...
No, after the battle... They have a big party.
Oh,
everybody
yes,
gets
yes,
drunk.
Yes, you're right. I get what you're saying. Sorry. I thought you were talking about
no.
at the fire during that.
Well, to be fair, there's a lot of times where they all get drunk.
Yes.
Oh, shout out to Pod for that beautiful song and Florence and the Machine for covering it in the credits. Both songs beautiful. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
You're talking about like the after party.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Like when they're real drunk.
And the coffee cup was on the table.
Yeah. I got to be honest. I did not catch that in the
episode. I didn't catch the coffee cup. Also not pissed about the coffee cup. Everybody needs to calm down.
You know, that's the kind of thing where I'm, you know, I look at it and I'll laugh a little bit. But it didn't upset me in any way.
I'm going to hit that at the end of this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nick's got a plan.
He's got a...
Yeah, and it all comes together.
Wait, Nick has a plan?
Yeah. The Starks bugged me because you even said it. I don't know if you said it during this podcast or if you said it.
I talk about Game of Thrones
a lot,
so who knows?
So I'm like trying to like get my story straight. Yeah, no, you did at the beginning of this. You said you would have never mentioned... being a relative at all. And that was the whole purpose. Danny was like, don't say anything and just remain my lover. And
if
I'll rule
be
the...
my lover.
Exactly. And
gotta get with my friend.
Honest Abe over there went to the freaking tree with his family. And Bran's like, I will tell you a story because I already know.
The cardboard cutout started talking.
Yeah, looking like the freaking Canadians from South Park. Just like, I will tell you a story. And
that sounded a little bit Forrest Gump.
I felt like that was in character with John, though.
I also feel like that was in character.
Again,
it
honest
was
day,
stupid.
He always has to be a
honorable son of Ned
secret.
Stark.
Yes. He ruined that kid.
You know, except for he's not, but.
It's yeah. true.
And then he tells Sansa, I was trying to think of her name, wasn't coming to me.
He never actually tells them.
He Bran doesn't. Tells Bran
them.
Tells
but
them.
But he gives yes. them the green light.
Yeah, yeah, he's like, give it a go.
John. Although,
go three-eyed
can
raven.
We talk about how stupid it is that he doesn't say it himself? He just looks at Bran and goes, tell them? Like, you well, chicken
it,
shit.
It was so, his cop no, out.
It was, so, yeah. It was so he could be honest with Dany and say he didn't tell him.
Yeah.
Because she said, don't tell him. Well, he didn't.
You know Sansa, who has it out for Dany, because she knows that she's a little crazy.
Because Sansa's the smartest person
she is,
in Westeros.
And Sansa has the hardest story out of everybody in this series, I feel.
Oh, yeah. She has, in my opinion, she has the best character arc of anybody.
She does. And, oh, I do want to go back.
You start out hating her.
I hated her through season 6.
You thought she was like a little brat.
And then there's a certain point you're like, ooh, I didn't dislike her that much. She doesn't deserve that.
I do want to rewind just to skosh and go back to the longest night, or the long night. I thought it was really badass that Arya is the one who killed the Night King.
Oh my God. Like, I was screaming at my TV. My buddy was like, dude, are you okay? Because I was like, holy fuck, Arya Stark just saved the world. That's what I said.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people had a problem with that plot
A lot
point.
Of people and, can go shove it.
And I did not. My problems with it, you know, around that weren't the fact that she is the one who did it. I don't like the way they sold the scene. There were some aspects there that I really didn't like. I really wish they'd have ramped up this idea that Jon battling with the dragon or doing is what cleared the opportunity for her. Because, you know, there is that theory out there.
Yeah, that he wasn't yelling. He was yelling for her to go.
For her to go. Which I say it's a theory, and I think it's pretty well established that it was something like that was going on. And I really like that aspect of it before, or, you know, I wish they'd have played up on that a little bit, that John gave her the opportunity or helped give her the opportunity.
So does she move like the Flash now or something? Because him standing there screaming at the dragon for her to run, get past the other like members of the Night or White Walker Night mm-hmm. Watch people and jump 20 feet to them.
She vaulted off a pile of dead bodies.
Oh, did she?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't know. I couldn't see it.
Exactly.
Touché, sir.
They could have shown it better. Like, there should have been a scene where she is like looking around, trying to look for an opportunity to move around that side and realizes that she can't because there's a dragon, you know, preventing that side. And John, he steps in the way, he distracts the dragon, and she sneaks around and comes in on that side through the shadows and is then able to make the leap and you know, the scene happens. You know, something like that would have sold the scene to me a lot more, and it would have seemed far more desperate mm-hmm. than Arya just springs out and pulls a cool maneuver. Which, don't get me wrong, so I don't have a problem that she killed him. I just don't think they sold it.
No, I thought it was badass, and I'm going to come up to all this at the very end. Back, fast forward.
Oh, that was really good.
That was great. No sound effects needed here.
Back to where we were on The Last of the Starks and Honest Abe telling his family. So then Dany gets pissed. This is like where we're starting to see the tidal wave go of her starting to become the Mad Queen. I'm sort of talking a lot, I feel like.
You're fine. We're digging it. Just aim it at the mic.
Mainly because I'm so pissed off at this season.
We feel your anger, but we like it.
So Sansa can tell what Dany's true error is.
She can
is
smell
the
crazy.
Daughter of the Mad
well,
King.
You know, I don't know. You can say how much she knew. I think she was concerned. She was one of the few people that was truly concerned that that could be the case, whereas everybody else had drunk the Kool-Aid a little too much.
Well, and I think Sansa's, again, building up on her horrible backstory to where she is now, she could smell evilness in her
because she'd been so close to Cersei, so close to Ramsay. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, she also knew that, you know, you're giving that person a lot of power.
Yeah.
That's what she was concerned about, is this person had better be really good because of the power that we have given them and the position we're putting them in.
But honestly, really what it comes down to for Sansa is that she would have been okay with Dany. It was about the North and that she was in it for the North. Sansa doesn't really care what happens to the rest of Westeros. She cares about what happens to the North. And they had that moment where you could see that they would have made it okay and they could have had a happily ever after if Dany was willing to unclench enough to let go of the North or even discuss it. And she couldn't. And Sansa saw that and realized she was obstinate and that she couldn't be trusted.
Yeah. There really was the moment where Sansa was like, if she's not even willing to engage in this idea, then we know that this isn't, she's not altruistic after all. People were like, this was some sort of a turnaround for Dany. And I think they've been foreshadowing this for a long time.
Yeah.
I think that there's been some hints
and
that
they've always said this isn't going to have a happy ending from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But continue.
Well, and not to mention, if you watch Game of Thrones and expected a happy ending, I'm sorry, I have no pity for
Honestly,
you.
Honestly, I thought it was a happier ending than I expected.
It was happier than what I was expecting.
Thank you. And I think that was my issue.
You're talking about Dany, and this is going to kind of be my overall opinion here. I don't have any particular plot point that I'm opposed to. I don't care that Arya killed the Night King. I don't care that Dany Ayres, kind of went crazy. I don't care that Jon killed her. These are all these plot points I am fine with. The problem is they didn't sell a damn one of them to me.
No.
I didn't buy into any of those. You want to show Dany Ayres kind of going crazy? Show me her going crazy a little bit more.
All of a sudden went crazy.
All I could think of was the jerk. He hates these cans. I'm like, all I could think of is... Yeah, the whole time I'm like, she hates these bells. She hates these bells because that's how they presented it.
Yeah.
Now, I realized that there were some hints and a few other things in there, but they should have sold that a little more. They showed the descent a little more.
And the reason why I said it was kind of just quick, I'm going to go to the end of this episode, The Last of the Starks.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever Dany brings her army of like 100 people down to
King's Landing,
standing out there, and... Missandei, is that right?
Missandei,
is about to be
beheaded.
And that is whenever I was okay. I didn't care that she died because she was like, she was a character.
She was a tertiary character.
She wasn't like, I didn't get the feels for her. But that's the problem. They didn't build the story for us to give a shit because.
See, I was out at the moment. I believe it's literally on that episode when they're talking about what to do, and John's like, "I'm going to march the army of the North to the South." They're like, "We're going to Dragonstone." I'm like, "Why would you put yourself on ships right now?"
Yeah,
I'm like, Euron is out there with a superior fleet. Dragonstone is actually really close.
Once again, the tactician at work here.
I'm like, no, I literally said that as soon as they said to go to Dragonstone, I said it out loud. I looked at my wife and I said, "Why would they be anywhere near the ocean right now? Why would they be anywhere near boats? Just march to the south, fly your dragons down there." And I thought to myself, nothing good can come of this.
I also have serious questions about the size of Westeros because they travel so quickly.
Well, they're skipping forward in time. Because if you read through, it took months for Robert Baratheon to travel up to the north.
They can't because Cersei was pregnant. You start to show.
Yeah,
it would have taken weeks and she would have been out here. I'm indicating with my hands. Yeah. Sorry, people who can't see me. Instead of, a little baby bump.
As the seasons went on, they played a lot faster and looser with that. And by the time they gave them to season 8, they just completely even gave up on any pretense.
And it was like, it takes 2 days to travel from all the way north to all the way south.
No, it should have. I mean, even if they marched straight, the army should have taken a couple of months to get that far from, especially Winterfell, because Winterfell is not, at the edge of the border of the north.
No, it's up there.
Yeah, it's a long way.
Oh, shout out though. Did you guys notice? Because I loved how they changed how they upped the game on the credits, and the credits changed every time.
Yeah.
And the map that of Westeros that Cersei had painted on the floor in the opening credits, you could see that it had cracked, and then. When Tyrion was walking to find Jaime and Cersei, it had cracked. Where it cracked was the line that divided the north from the west, the rest of Westeros.
I did not catch that.
So here's the deal. They spent more time on the opening credits of this show than they did on the show itself.
It didn't have that much detail.
It showed the credits were lovely.
Yeah. So now I'm going to skip to the next episode.
I like when Nick hates things. It's fun.
It's great.
Well, and the reason why... Okay, so... Missandei gets beheaded, and you see Dany going cray, and you see Grey Worm becoming a prick.
Grey Worm lost his humanity. Missandei is what tied him to humanity.
He also lost his junk at birth, so you can't lose much more.
He didn't lose it at birth. He was old enough to remember.
Well, see? I would have been crazy then. I'd been like, my balls.
See, there once again, I'm okay with Grey Worm being like, that changes me as a person because my lover just got beheaded in front of me. I'm okay with that. They just didn't sell it to me at all. I felt nothing because it was like, well, that was 30 seconds of screen time, so fuck off.
I'm going to hit that too at the end. This all has... around, like, you know, I'm going to round it up at the
All
end.
All right, he's got a plan.
This
he's got a
crappy
plan.
Season. The bells. Okay.
Ding dong.
The better battle than the long night, in my opinion.
Okay, I
do we call it a battle?
They massacre.
Surrendered so, and then got massacred.
Somebody out there, and I wish I could remember where it was, but somebody released the patch notes for that episode. They were acting like this were a video game. Mm-hmm. And for that episode, here's the new patch notes. And it was great because it reads just like it.
For the dummies in the room, can you please explain what patch notes are? Because
so
I don't know what that
when
means.
When they make some alterations to a game and they release an update.
Like after a beta test?
DLC.
No games anymore. They're continually updating things.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So when they update the game, when they make an update, they'll release what they call their patch notes. So these are the things that we changed in the game.
Oh, on the patches, the things they repaired.
Right.
Got it.
So these are the things that they changed in the game.
I'm with
so they'll
you.
Release these. And if you do much online gaming, you'll be familiar with this. And you know, usually you read through these.
I do all
to see
the
it.
Online gaming. Can't you tell?
So they released these as though they were the patch notes for this, and it was like the Dothraki have been reintroduced into the game after a fan outcry. Because, you know,
they didn't all die. So Sir Jor ran out there with them. And then all of a sudden he comes back and you see tons of them running back with him.
You only see Sir Jor and Ghost. All of their flames are extinguished and the Dothraki are gone. And the next episode, there's a crap ton of Dothraki again. Mm-hmm. It's like, where did these guys come
from?
You
totally saw them come running back at the troops.
You saw like three come back.
You
saw all of their flames extinguished. That was the whole point of that dramatic scene. And then suddenly the next episode, we have thousands of them again.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's BS.
Maybe they sailed over because some of them stayed behind at the grass seas. Well,
they said things like, what was it? So dragons have been buffed to be more immune to ranged attacks. Euron Greyjoy has lost the dragon slaying feat. The accuracy of ballista have been reduced. You know, it's all the because you know here we see the one episode.
Not to mention the terrain of King's Landing has drastically changed from previous seasons.
Oh, absolutely! You've seen the pictures. It's nowhere near the same place. But you know, you have one episode where Euron is able to not only hide a fleet, which by the way, I don't know if you know how hard it is to hide a fleet. But
he didn't even like it was just kind of around a corner. Like,
yeah,
it
I know.
Wasn't,
yeah.
Like
you know how tall sails are. You can see sails a long way.
Yeah, because they didn't
and
have like a motor
has
on
the
those
most
things.
Obnoxious compensatory sails on his ship ever.
He does. They're ostentatious. And so somehow he managed to hide this and then bullseye a dragon out of the sky like it was nothing one episode. And then the next episode that you give him like three times that many range weapons and not a single one of them even comes close to even. To
well,
him.
It's because Dany was uber pissed and could
scare
the dragon out of the
so
way.
So she had her angry armor on.
It came out of the sun. They couldn't see it.
Okay. Yeah. So here's the thing. She should have destroyed the fleet then because guess what? Ships don't turn fast. All she had to do was go around them and come up from behind. You can't turn those things around very quickly. Those ballista had a very small firing arc. All she had to do is...
Or you could have just sent scouts.
Yeah, or they should have had scouts out. Never have been on the water at all because there's nothing they need in Dragonstone. Absolutely nothing they need there. Mm-mm. So there's no tactical or strategic reason for them to go to Dragonstone. They should have just flown south. And if one dragon is all she needed to have done all that, that should have happened a while back.
Yeah.
Oh, once again, shout out to Sansa's genius in saying, hey... Everybody just fought a battle for their lives. Maybe give them a week off to recuperate before making a march south and fight again. And Dany being like, nah, bitch.
Especially since they end up really not doing anything. Like,
Drogon
did all the work.
They did some raping and pillaging.
Well,
they tried.
But I mean, like, as far as like affecting the outcome of the battle, I mean, Drogon did all the work.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that's where
strafing the whole city.
Dragon a-blazing, and the bells go off, because
The dragon didn't blaze till after the bells.
Right. The bells go off.
Which they've never established before that's a thing. Like, there's never been a point. It wasn't until Tyrion said that, just, you know, like the episode before, they were like,
yes, but has anybody forfeited a battle before?
There's a thing of, oh yeah, absolutely.
In the show?
In
King's Landing?
Well, I don't know if they've ever done it in the show, but even then, they could have established it at some point to make it a thing. Because it felt just so contrived that they just threw by the way, hey, we need somebody to say something about the bells so it makes sense. Okay. Hey, give it to Tyrion. He talks a lot.
Well, same thing. It's like a Star Wars episode. It's like Star Wars. It's like, oh, did you know that there's a weak point in this city that's the size of a Womp Rat?
You can bullseye. They used to do it back home. Guys, in case you haven't noticed, we will relate anything and everything to Star Wars. Welcome aboard.
So the city forfeits.
Yeah. Right? I love that they didn't ask Cersei's permission either. Everybody just started screaming, ring the bells.
She couldn't do anything about it because all of her troops were in the Red Keep at this point in time. Everybody else was pretty much gone. So that's when they're like, hey, we're not under their hold anymore. Ring those fucking bells.
And here's the thing. It's like, did you forget that she blew half you guys up in a church like a couple scenes back?
Lesser two evils, man.
They hated Cersei.
Everybody hates Cersei.
Yeah, the only reason that Cersei was still in control is because she had the forces to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They would have turned against her in a heartbeat, which is exactly what they were trying to imply that happened as soon as they had the opportunity, and they rang the bells and like, no.
And then Dany ruins it because she snaps.
Because she doesn't like bells. She hates those bells.
Misophonia. Look it up.
My God. So then... her and her dragon blow up the city and kill
everyone except
Arya.
At
least 98% of the population,
except for Arya and one white horse.
Yeah, what was the point of that stupid horse?
It was the tie into the innocence of the girl, and she refound herself. It's all very
behold
mad.
A pale horse.
Okay,
the little girl, so anyway. The little girl that got extra crispy was holding a white horse. She was an innocent child. It was Arya reconnecting with the innocence of herself.
Yeah,
but and letting go of the revenge and the anger.
But once again, it was they didn't sell it.
The only cool part of that whole entire episode to me was the fight between the Mountain and the Hound.
The Clegane Bowl was worth it. I give that. That was awesome. I'm glad we got that.
That was, and I liked how the only other thing I liked about in this season was the connection and the bond growing between Arya and the Hound.
Sandor Clegane, he was probably the biggest shining star of season 8, in my opinion.
Yes.
As far as, like, who
even
was
that
best.
Moment with Sansa, all of it.
Yep. No, that guy was awesome.
Yeah. Epic battle, find the Mountain, he can't die because for some reason he's a reincarnated zombie brought back from science and religion.
His coloring was real weird because they painted him up real blue and then he took everything off and not real blue.
And I couldn't figure out, which I guess it is the same actor who played the Mountain in the original.
No, it's the second.
There have been three actors who played the Mountain. This guy is the one who's played it the longest. I won't pretend to be able to pronounce his name.
Yeah, he's like Bulgarian or something and has a crazy name, but he won World's Strongest Man.
And he's evidently a really cool dude and really nice guy. He's actually not my favorite portrayal of the Mountain.
I thought he looked funny.
Well, the problem is that, although he is huge, this guy is massive, he doesn't look grizzled. He doesn't look, because the Mountain is not a pretty guy. And this guy,
I think he's younger than, especially the first guy. I think he's quite a bit younger.
Yeah, the first two, like, I thought they made a better, they looked more like the Mountain, although this guy was definitely bigger and the Mountain was supposed to be a very massive guy. This guy just looked too cuddly. He looked like, oh,
he does. He kind of looks like, aw.
Yep. Especially if you see the pictures of him and his like 5 foot tall girlfriend, and he's like holding her up by her feet and lifting her into the air like she's a gymnast. And
him next to Arya is really funny too.
No, it's
because Maisie Williams is tiny.
Yeah. Mm. So I don't know, but once again, not a real problem for me, especially once he turns undead because you don't ever see him anyway.
Right. I mean, I still don't fully understand that whole thing.
Well, they never really explain it in the books, but essentially he turns him into some sort of an undead, but not necessarily the raving zombie undead from the Night King.
Oh, okay. Well, it's cool. Cool battle.
Shout out to what was what's his name? Guy who made the undead come back.
Qyburn.
Qyburn's death was kind of my favorite because it was just all of a sudden like bam.
I command you to stop.
His head like on that sidewalk, like
just like a little melon, and then I love Cersei being like, you know what? Whatever you guys need to do is cool. I'm just gonna
peace
back
out.
Away.
Peace out.
You guys are good.
Yep.
Segwaying.
Killed
into,
by his own creation.
Yeah. Obviously, the battle ended and they both died. But
yeah, we've seen it. We know.
So Cersei and Jaime.
I will fight you on this, but
no.
Go ahead.
I wanted Jaime to kill Cersei.
I wanted Jaime to kill Cersei.
That was
because he knew what kind of an evil person she was.
I was on. He was going to die with her, but I thought he's going to go down and kill her and either kill himself or die.
It's because everybody's obsessed with the Valonqar. It didn't exist in the show.
This is the thing. Everybody hated Cersei just as much as her little bastard son that we were so happy to get poisoned in season 3, I think. But no, we got a romantic Romeo and Juliet ending where they both die together from the castle caving in. And if you look at the pictures in the next episode, empty 10 feet to the right.
So they did a whole lot of this in this. Because, you know, when you're watching her, like, take down the Red Keep, like, she obliterates it. There is nothing left. And then the very next episode, it's like, it's a little fucked up, but it's okay. And, you know, they're walking around the rooms that she knocked down. You know, when Tyrion goes down to find them, they're just buried under some rubble, as opposed to having completely collapsed like they showed in the episode before. I'm like, well, you can't short.
That was a continuity issue.
Yeah, you can't short raining down and then. But see, this is to me like it's like back to the Dothraki. You can't imply that all the Dothraki are dead, and the next thing you're like, because honestly, even where were the Unsullied? Because it looked to me like there are a few forces left. There's like 100 people left alive in Winterfell at the end of that battle, and suddenly they're like, no, we have enough to challenge them now.
They only let the white people celebrate in the Great Hall. Like if you notice and you look around, like that's why who you saw after the battle and the celebration. The North be racist, and they only let the white people in. The Unsullied and the Dothraki are brown. They were all outside.
No, I get that, but at the same time, if you watch the actual battle, at the point in time where the Night King dies, they make a point of showing you a lot of different scenes, and pretty much everybody's dead. There's a few little areas of holdout that aren't quite dead yet that are about to be overtaken, but the castle is taken. Mm-hmm. So where are these thousands of troops at? Because they were all out front. Then they kind of moved into the castle, and they show the main area of the keep. Like, it's empty. There's people off to the few sides. A few little minor battles going on.
And they were off in the dark where we couldn't see.
They all ran south and hid, apparently.
Yeah, I guess. I don't
know. Okay, I disagree, because I think that was the best possible death for Cersei, because she essentially killed herself. She could have run earlier. She had every chance to go. And so the thing,
they begged her.
The thing, they begged her to go. Qyburn begged her to go. Everybody begged her to go. And the thing that even she clung Tyrion. To,
even Tyrion tried to help her to save her.
Tyrion loved her. That's two people in Westeros that loved her. But
he hated her, though, too. Love and hate are not opposites.
Yes. And it was the thing that she clung to and the thing that cost her everything that ultimately cost her her life. The throne, the Iron Throne, killed her, too. When the Red Keep came falling down around her head, I thought it was poetic and beautiful. And I think that Jaime showing back up and coming back to her was his character arc going full circle, in that he wanted to be who he was with Brienne, but he realized that he wasn't. He was the person who loved his sister and who loved his sister and who was the only person in the world that did. And no matter what happened, he couldn't stay and play house with Brienne. He had to be who he was, and he was not going to let her and their unborn child die alone. He knew she was going to die. He knew he was going there to die with her, and they died together. And I thought it was poetic and beautiful. Screw you. Nick's face looks like he just bit into his sandwich, and it's not what he hoped it would be.
I'm going to go back to the same well. I'm okay if that were the case. I just wish they'd have sold it as that, and they didn't. It just seemed like he just ran back there, and then they got crushed by rocks.
Yeah.
If your theory is accurate, I'd be okay with that. But they definitely didn't portray it, and they definitely didn't sell it as that.
And, you know, again, I feel so horrible, like, trashing this show because...
That's the problem. We've done a good job of not really going back too many of the other seasons. The problem is this show hit such a high mark.
It did.
You know, they did so great, and that's why I gave it the C-, because I realized that this is only terrible when you compare it to the other seasons.
Yeah.
Okay. Me. I can't hold it anymore because you guys are going to be fucking pissed. I usually wait till the end, guys, to share my rating, but I can't hold it in anymore. Okay. I just season 8, give it an A-.
Ooh.
Fudge.
Okay.
Them's fighting words.
I know. So everybody leading up to the season was like, oh my God, what's going to be the ultimate villain? Is she going to fight Cersei? And then the Night King's going to be the ultimate villain. Is it going to be the other way around? I pose that the ultimate villain of season 8 was time. Because this was beautifully acted. Every performance was strong.
I agree with that.
I actually disagree with you, Nick. I feel that it was really well written. Mm. However, it's like when you have a 20-page paper due and you realize you've waited until the night before and you have to get it done. This story was so big and so expansive. I don't feel that they phoned it in. I feel that they did it justice. But it had to happen so fast, and there were so many loose ends that had to be tied up that they had to do it at such breakneck speed.
They're the ones that set the pace.
You couldn't go along with it.
They're the ones that made the decision to make
it
six episodes.
They did paint themselves into the corner. Well, it had a lot to do with contractually, because the stars of the show have a lot of other things going on and a lot of big movies, and they could only get most of them for six episodes.
But that's the problem that I think you and I have already talked about, like, before this. I would have been okay with them doing a part one and part two of season six. Make each episode two and a half hours long. Did three episodes this year and three episodes next, because you could have tied a lot more in.
See, I don't think they could have done. I think they needed more episodes. I think it needed at least four more episodes to have sold this correctly. And I think that them making the decision to do it in six, whether they had some constraints or not, I think that they just set themselves up for failure.
They really did.
I think the other villainy of time was that they took that year off. We have books that people are obsessed with. We have the show that people are obsessed with. And we have rampant fan theories. I love watching fan theory videos on YouTube. I can't tell you how many people knew. I mean, they absolutely knew for certain that they had this ending figured out. They knew exactly how it was going to end. They had figured it all out. And these people got comfortable with their endings for the show. And then it didn't end the way that anybody expected it to end. But people were mad because it didn't end the way they wanted it to. And that's what got people so pissed. People had so much time to be convinced that John and Danny were going to get this happily ever after. People thought it was like etched in stone that they were going to have a kid, that Danny was going to be pregnant this season.
I knew that it wasn't going to be a happy ending.
Yeah, I think anybody who thought that it wasn't happy, or anybody who thought it was going to be a happy ending, probably was delusional.
Well, their version of a happy ending, I should say.
I'm going to go ahead and skip to this last episode.
Okay.
Because that's going to tie into what you just said, I think. This last episode was so boring that I thought it was a joke. Because nothing happened. It was all just like, well, all the battles are over. Danny won. Here we go. So they imprison
Tyrion
for letting Jaime out for the previous episode.
Right.
So we knew something bad was going to happen. Well, Tyrion, of course, spoke to Honest Abe.
No, they did not imprison Tyrion for letting Jaime go. They imprisoned him.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He threw
throwing it back in Danny's face.
I think that's part of the implication, though, because they knew that was going to be a problem. But yeah, they didn't really say why. She just said, take him away. It was imprison him because, well, I'm the queen now, and I can just say it, imprison somebody and don't really need to have a reason.
Right. So Grey Worm is made like lead of the battles or whatever.
Grey Worm always was.
Yeah, really kind of always was.
But didn't she like label him as something like in front of everybody?
Yeah, she came out and said like he's the master, like an official title, a master of the armies or whatever.
Yeah. But he's always been
he'd always been in charge.
Right. And then Tyrion threw his hand badge.
His brooch.
Pretty much
brooch
down.
His brooch.
That's what it's called. And pissed her off. John was sort of just...
was kind of just standing there standing like, I don't know what to do.
What do I do with my hands? she just walks by, brushes him off, and then Arya...
Oh, but shout out to that scene where she walks up and they show us that she's the full-on dragon queen because
Drogon's wings behind her.
That was great.
The cinematography was cool in this episode.
I think a lot of the cinematography was great. A lot of the acting was great. The sets were great. The costuming was great. There's a lot of great things there. Unfortunately, there was a lot of bad things, too.
And that's my issue. Like... and then all of a sudden, Arya comes out of nowhere because...
dude, we've established that's her shtick, okay?
I get it, but it's like, I get it. You're 3 feet tall and you can come out of the shadows.
And you can dance
quick.
On air.
But she's got the ninja training and all that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So then Jon speaks to Tyrion, and Tyrion is trying to get him to be like, yo, you are the true heir to the Iron Throne. your girlfriend. And
sometimes duty is the death of love.
Is
yeah.
crazy. You can see it because she is the Mad Queen. Yep. Her dad's genes totally was flowing through her.
They flipped that coin and it landed tails.
Yep. Yeah. And then the death. He stabs her in the heart.
That After was, he gives I have her to a say, chance, that was cold.
He gives her a chance. And she's still like, oh, people must die in order for it to be balanced. Like, totally.
Well, and she had already established that she had no intentions of stopping with Westeros. Yep. That she had intentions of taking over the entire world.
Take everything.
Right. So then he knew that his family was in danger, what's left.
And she was going to take over the world by fire and blood.
Yep. Yeah. And so he had to. I get it. But to me, it was a little bit of a cop-out on this part. He stabbed her. Drogon was like, ah! Saw the throne, knew that that was why his mother went mad, burned and melted the
I
throne.
Can I just say how much I love that Drogon was the one that got it? He's like, all your human bullshit aside, I understand the true villain and I'm gonna burn it down.
Right.
That was one of my favorite scenes of season 8 was the whole, pretty much from the moment that he walks in, they confront, they kiss, he kills her, the Drogon thing. I actually thought that was the best part. They sold that scene to me more than I think pretty much anything else in the entirety of season 8.
This is where it starts to turn to crap for me real quick.
Well, yeah, pretty much everything after
we're
that
at
is
a
crap.
Because then it flips. And I was like, okay, I kind of thought like after that he was the true heir to the Iron Throne, even though the Iron Throne's not there anymore. He's in prison. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't tell a time frame, but all of a sudden everybody is.
Well, it had
in.
Warmed up. The snow had yeah. melted around the edges of the dragon, whatever, the dragon keep.
Yeah. And so everybody's there. And Grey Worm's still a prick. He's lost his
okay,
honey.
He's
lost
disagree.
His queen.
He's real pissed about
this
John.
Is the part that I don't care about because I'm like, you have no ground to stand on because you are a nobody. You are a general. You're not even sitting
He's
in
somebody
the high
that
table.
Pledged his life to her, and the person he pledged his life to was just murdered in cold blood by her lover.
He is
But then
a
why
Targaryen.
Didn't he just kill Jon?
Yes.
I mean, if that's the case, he should have just killed
because
Jon as soon as they found
orders.
Him. But whose orders?
Whose orders?
Nobody's Tyrion.
Left. But this
oh,
is
I
Tyrion.
Guess he wasn't the hand.
Nobody's no. left. And it doesn't matter because Jon is the true heir to the mm-hmm. Iron Throne and a Targaryen. So you have no ground to stand on and be a little bitch about this. And I don't care. I do not care. Whenever they were doing that whole like
the little council meeting,
yeah. thing, and some random stands up and was like, "Well, guess what? I'm
that was their uncle." And I had actually been asking that.
That's Ed Myrtle. Yeah,
I didn't remember him by this point.
He was a untied end, and I had actually asked what about their uncle? It's the only end they haven't tied up, and then there he was.
I already forgot about him because I was waiting.
Same actor, even. He's
he's the
there.
One that actually got married at the Red Wedding.
Oh.
Yeah, the Red Wedding was his wedding.
So the only person that I remembered was that crazy little nephew who was sucking on his mom's boob at like
Robin Aaron.
Yeah. He's the only one that I remembered, and I was like, oh, it's that creepy kid.
Well, Yara was there. You remembered her, right?
Yeah,
Yara Greyjoy.
Jan Royce.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
The new Prince of Dorne.
That I hadn't seen since like season 3.
The new Prince of Dorne doesn't even get a name. Which, by the way, I pointed this out before to people. Dorne is an interesting situation because, you know, Dorne's armies were never in a fight. So all of these other, all these other areas, like they're devastated. Like their troop, you know, they're going to have very few troops. Whereas Dorne has a full, healthy army. They lost their leaders, but like
yeah, but
20 people
like
got Dorne's killed.
Yeah, but I Dorne's more worried about loving, not fighting.
Historically speaking, that's not the case. Dorne very much to the
In
they
my
love
head,
both.
That is the case.
So, but I mean, when Dorne shows up, they're going to be the ones with the big army at this point because they've kind of been out of the fighting. So their army gets there, then they're going to have a lot more input because they're like, hey, that's cute, those couple thousand troops that you have left. Here's our 40,000 or 50,000.
I mean, Sand Snakes and Oberyn were all really badasses. I would position myself in Dorne in Westeros, just BT dubs.
So then
the weather's nicer there.
Yeah.
And the people are way hotter.
So then all of a sudden Sam speaks up and then they do their like little,
if we're talking about the coffee cup, there was a water bottle behind his foot.
There was that too.
I didn't catch it in the episode either, but I don't care.
And then But this is what I hated. All of a sudden, Sam spoke the truth, and then they all laughed in his face.
It was a little too on your nose when they did it.
And that's the problem. I'm like, okay, you went this whole time and all of a sudden you're making like a modern day political statement, because I get it.
Yeah, it was a little too anachronistic.
And it was
more so
dumb
than the waddle bottle on the coffee cup, in my opinion.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, they all vote in Bran.
Yeah. And see, now, once again, I don't care that Bran wound up on the throne. That part doesn't bother me. I really
He's already on a throne.
Well,
I'm going to hell.
here's the scene that I wanted. I wanted the scene where they're all like, John's in charge now. Because they'd been fighting. That's what they're all leading towards. They're like, we all want to support John. Well, why did they suddenly stop supporting him? Because he did what they wanted him to do? No, I wanted the scene where they came out and they're all like, John's the new king. And he basically walks out of there and they're like, hey, we just got you named the new king. And he's like, you know what? I don't want to. I'm out. I'm going to the
but
north.
But that's the problem. I think they did, if I remember. I only watched this episode once and I'll never watch it again. Because then Grey Worm, who has no ground to stand on, said, absolutely not. Missandei. Or I can't even do this fucking accent. But I'm just so, at this point, so done with that show.
Well, you know, the only reason for him to keep John alive from, you know, that standpoint is to use him as some sort of a bargaining chip. And he never used him
but
as a bargaining chip.
He can't. He is a nobody.
But he has, I feel like it's been bred into him that he doesn't get to decide his own actions. He has to wait for somebody to tell him what to do.
And
he's been brainwashed since you were a child. It doesn't matter if your queen is dead. You're still going to wait for somebody to tell you what to do.
But they did. They did. They told him what to do, and he said no.
That's the thing. Everybody who was above him kept saying they wanted Tyrion to be a hand. He's like, absolutely not. We want Jon to be our king because he is the freaking.
I don't think they ever said they wanted to be king. They said they wanted him to be set free.
Oh, yeah. And he threw a BF over that. And the king himself, after being made king, said Jon's free. And he's like, no. And it's like, you just naysayed the king. Off with your head, bro.
Yeah, see, I don't disagree with what you're saying there, Lulu, but then he very adamantly opposes the people who he should have been conditioned to listen to. That's why I thought it was just weird. You know, they should have showed some conflict where he's trying to understand what to do here. But, you know, then why, like I said, he should have either just killed John outright or used John to get something for him and his people.
Yeah.
Again, it was, the villain is time, because I feel like all of this would have made sense if we had had more time to explore it. So what
we
should
more
have
episodes.
Happened?
We needed more episodes.
We needed two more seasons. There should have been one season that dealt with the whole Night King thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of that season was Arya killing the Night King. And then there should have been a whole nother season
of the downfall of Dany.
And maybe they're both short seasons. Maybe they're both 6-episode seasons and there were 12 episodes left of the show. But all of it would have made sense, because story-wise, I am okay with everything that happened. I just needed more detail as it unfolded for it to make sense and for there not to be big plot holes.
My major thing also, this is the last thing I'm saying about this, because we've already talked about the council. And this is the end. John gets set free, but he has to go back to the north. He has to become a
Night's Watch.
Night's Watch, yes.
Why was there a Night's Watch?
Is there a Night's Watch? Because the wall got destroyed.
Tyrion did address it, but I think it's stupid.
Well, they said they need
the world will always need a place for bastards and the unwanted.
And then he becomes a wildling again. Okay,
the idea that he just rage quits and he's like, I don't want this thing. Y'all figure out what you want. I'm going to where I was most at home.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was one of you guys who told me this or if I had this discussion with somebody at work, but my mind was kind of blown. They made Bran the king, who is also the three-eyed raven. I talk about the show a lot, mm-hmm. so I can't remember if it was one of you guys who said
I do the same.
And then they said... Well, the last three-eyed raven lived to be 3,000 years old, and Bran's like 18.
He didn't.
Did he not?
That's not the story of the three-eyed raven. So believe it or not, the three-eyed raven that we saw before Bran, he was a Targaryen.
Yeah, he was,
mm-hmm.
he was related. Yeah.
He was a Targaryen.
Well, how old was he?
He was the same age as
Maester.
He was in the same age range as Aemon. He was over 100, but not like... He wasn't like 180. He was like 105 or something in that.
Like he had come up with Maester Aemon. They were relatively similar ages.
They were actually sent to the wall together. They were given a, because Duncan the Call.
Like I remember that episode, but I don't remember.
Well, they don't cover. I've been trying to really hold back from the, I have all the book knowledge. And actually these come from the Duncan Egg stories.
Mm-hmm.
Because Duncan the Tall was one of the people that was the honor guard.
Also an ancestor of Brienne of Tarth.
Yeah, because Aemon, they offered Aemon the throne. Because once again, there was a council to decide who gets to be on the throne next. And they offered it to Aemon. And he turned it down because he said, I'm a maester first. I don't want this. So the compromise for that was, well, then since you can't be a threat or don't want to be a threat, he sent himself to the Night's Watch so some people wouldn't use him against whoever they chose. Why can't I think of his name right now? Because he was the archer. And he actually had a Valyrian sword of his own, which they never address. But he got to keep it. And they send him to the Night's Watch, and he eventually disappears at some point in time, and that's when he became the Three-Eyed Raven. So he was 100 and something, so ancient from human years.
There was a story, something about like one of the original Three-Eyed Ravens living.
Yeah, the implication
really
that there
long
had
time.
That there'd been a series of them, and that he became the Three-Eyed Raven for somebody else, and so on and so forth. Uh-huh. So I think they existed that long, but the previous Three-Eyed Raven, like I said, he was 100 and something, so
still
old,
a long
but,
time because yeah. I mean, Bran. 18 or whatever.
Brendan River, Brendan Targaryen. Sorry. Mm. That was his name. Sorry.
See, like, I didn't read the books because they're not finished, and I'm not going to wait 20 years for the next to come out. So,
see, so let me just say this because I'm, like I said, I really tried to stay away from the I am the douchebag who read the books. But apparently,
be that douchebag.
But apparently, I am.
School me, Rich.
So, you know, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the entirety of the show just a second here. So, from the very beginning, that was always a little bit of a detractor to me because I always felt like they were rushing through everything because this is a massive set of stories. These are tomes. You know, they're
a lot of storylines got cut.
A lot of characters got cut. So when I first started watching the show, I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't think it was bad, but there was always that in the back of my head where I felt like they were breezing through it a little too quickly. So I always have felt like this show was at an accelerated pace. Now, I loved it, and I liked it in so many ways, but that's always been back there. So now then when we get to season 8...
We get to hyperspeed.
Yeah, it is. It's like, I felt like, oh no, they've gone plaid, because they overshot it entirely. You know, before, while it was accelerated, I felt like they were able to keep a hold of the essence of the story and hold it together and get to the relevant parts and present them in a way that really made us interested and excited to watch the show. And in season 8, they went so fast that they breezed by all of that stuff that connected it together for us.
Mm-hmm. And
so,
they've left us with emotional whiplash.
See, this exactly. is why I like when Rich will come back and say something. Because, like, that's the point of this podcast. I just freaking spat for an hour and 10 minutes about how much I hate this season. But I have no working knowledge of this world because I never read the books. I watched each season, I think I tried to rewatch this series one time, but then I just could not handle that prick who was, what was his name? The king who everybody
Joffrey?
Hated.
Joffrey.
I hated Joffrey.
You were supposed to hate Joffrey, though.
And they did a great job.
Oh,
at
yeah.
that. But I just could not watch it again.
Shout out to Jack Gleason. You did great, yes. man. You know, apparently everybody loves that guy. Like, he was everybody's favorite on set. Like,
he
they were sad
also
when
he. It has the most charmingly trashy accent because he yeah. like puts on, you know, his fancy British accent, but he actually has a much more street accent when he speaks, and it's so charming.
He did a wonderful job with Joffrey. But you're supposed, it's just like in the beginning, you're supposed to hate Sansa.
Right. And I just don't know. Like,
I have
rewatched. Thank you for bringing that in, though, and telling me your parts of that. I still, even though I hate this season, I appreciate everybody's hard work. I watched that documentary, and I thought it was going to make me like this season a little more, and it still couldn't sell it for me.
That's why I say, like, the sets were still amazing. Visually, this was awesome. There's so much great cinema photography that went into it. The crew did such an amazing job.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've gotten this argument with some of my other friends about, you know, are the writers to blame? Here's the problem. I don't know how much influence the writers versus the producers, who was ultimately making these decisions. So that's why I can't decide whether it's the writers, the producers, or, you know, the executive producers, or some dipshit at HBO who made them all do it this way. I don't know the exact answer to this. All I know is that's who's to blame. Whoever made these decisions to make this in 6 episodes and accelerate that pace to that much, they're the ones who ruined it because they overshot, they moved it too fast, and you no longer, it's like when you're driving down the road and, you know, at 20 mile an hour, you can pretty much see everything that's going on, but at 80 mile an hour, you're going to miss road signs. You know, that's kind of what happened here. They decided, let's try it at 120 and see if we miss our exit.
Yeah.
Well, that is a lovely tie-in to, usually we try and, you know, do the best of times, the worst of times, have you pick a great thing and not so great thing, but we've really covered, like, you know, what really fell flat the most, what you guys liked the most. I think that now we need to look at the whole series and just give it a grade, whatever, having seen episode one all the way through episode 70 something, whatever it was, and just give the entire project a grade. What is that grade?
Nick, I'll let you.
I'm going to say, okay, if season eight was their semester final, mm-hmm. then I'm going to be like, all right, you know what? You started off strong with a 99 and then you bombed your final.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you still end up with at least depending on how much it is worth an 89. I give it a B plus. It does not have a rewatch value for me because I would totally skip season eight and it would just end all of a sudden.
You don't think it's going to change the way that you see it knowing how it's going to end?
Yeah, no, I just can't stand that season. Like,
you know the disappointment is coming again, so you don't want to put yourself through it all over
yeah.
again.
And the problem is, it's like, you have Joffrey for the first three seasons, and he's such a dick that you don't want to...
He's not that big of a dick in season one.
Well, and
he's just
and
mildly
that's the thing.
Dickish.
Like, that guy did such a great job doing his mm-hmm. role that you were so happy when he died, and then all of a sudden you have your fillers, which were cool, but then you have... You don't have a good enough foundation for me to rewatch it. Like, there's some shows that I can rewatch, like Sopranos. And I remember a lot of people were pissed off at the series finale of Sopranos. But I thought, you know what?
I didn't mind that one.
That was a real possibility for this world that they're in.
Yeah, I think it was much less disappointing to me than this season of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Because, see, I will probably never rewatch Game of Thrones either. Not that I wouldn't. I just know that I just don't have that kind of time in my schedule.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's a big commitment, and it's a lot of emotional up and down.
There's too many other things that are new out that I'd rather watch instead. But, I mean, if I totally had the time in my schedule, yeah, I'd probably give it a rewatch.
And I'm glad that it did become such a phenomenon that it did, because it launched higher these talented people's careers, so I get to follow them into different work.
All right, I'm going to jump in here because you just hit on my point of why, because I'm going to go ahead and give the same an A minus. Now, here's why. Now, I'm about to probably make both of you a little mad, but you already know this about me. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big Harry Potter fan.
It's true. We let it slide, but now, continue.
Let me explain a little bit why. Because when it comes to fantasy settings, Harry Potter is the twilight of this fantasy world for me.
As someone who's never read it, you don't get to make that statement.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll give you a little something there, but it's not like you can't exist in this world and in geek culture without
knowing
a few things about it.
Also, it's young adult fiction, so it's in a different genre.
It is, but see, that's the point. I'm okay if it would have stayed young adult fiction, but it entered the mainstream. And at that point in time, to me, this is watered down fantasy, which is perfect for young adult fiction, which is where it should be. Now, if this was going to be geared towards that, and that's who's took on it. But the two people sitting across from the table from me right now are not young adults.
But
so we were when it came out.
We were when it came out.
Okay, and fair enough. If that's where you're rooting it from, and that's why I'm not going to sit here and be like, you guys are all wrong. Because some of this is just a little more personal opinion. But it's always felt watered down to me. Now, maybe some of that is because I wasn't a young adult when it came out. Mm-hmm. And, I'm going to be a little hipster here in my geekery because I'm the old school geek when you had to hide it. And, you know,
because it wasn't cool.
It wasn't cool. And so I realized that Harry Potter he's like Elvis to me, where I wouldn't have what I do like if he hadn't existed.
Right.
And Harry Potter is what really brought a lot of this into the mainstream. Why geek, it's very responsible for putting geek culture into the mainstream. More than anything else. But to me, it was always the watered down version. It was like, oh, we had to water it down so everybody can like it. That's part of the reason why I was never as big of a fan. Now, suddenly Game of Thrones comes onto the scenes, and Game of Thrones is not watered down fantasy. It mm-hmm. is the opposite. It's you're taking a shot of fantasy whiskey here.
And it's neat.
Yes, it is going to hit you, and it's going to burn. And see, this is why I'm like, okay, now finally we can get some good hard-boiled fantasy into the mainstream. Mm-hmm. So Game of Thrones gave that to me. Game of Thrones brought that in there and let that element be a thing. So that's why I am forever going to be grateful for doing that, for the producers, for the writers, for the people who are responsible for this, because it showed people that you can have this that's not watered down and people can love it. So that's why I have to give it at least an A-. I can't go less than that, even though I agree with so much that season 8 had so many things that were wrong with it, and they really needed at least 4 more episodes or more. But from what it did culturally, I have to say I love where it took us, even if it was a rough road to get there. So once again, and I'm not trying to disparage Harry Potter. I actually don't think it's all that terrible. I just felt like it was light. I felt like it was kind of light fantasy. And personally, it always bugged me that we had to go through that step. But there is a practical part of me that realizes that as a culture, we had to go through that step.
Mm-hmm. I myself am going to give it an A+ on the whole. It was a genre changing season, mm-hmm. Series. It was spectacularly acted, well written, and I feel that it ultimately had a satisfying end, mm-hmm. even if it wasn't what people wanted it to be. But that actually is the perfect segue into the female factor, because we cannot talk about Game of Thrones without talking about the feminist aspects.
That's really an episode all on its own right there.
Well, yeah. I'm going to try to be as brief as I can, because early on there was some hate thrown at Game of Thrones because people didn't realize it was playing the long game. Because if you look at the early seasons, females are portrayed as sex objects and baby makers and not much more. But you get just beneath the surface and you see that the true characters of power in this show were all women. Westeros was run by women. Maybe not in title, but we have the badass in Brienne of Tarth, we have the thinker in Sansa, we have the assassin in Arya, we have two versions of the Mad Queen. We have strong, empowered characters, but beyond just what it did for women in the genre of fantasy, who tend to be two-dimensional characters a lot of the time, especially in visual works, not in the written word. It stepped up the whole genre for the marginalized. We have queer people that are not seen as a caricature of queer people. We have a dwarf who is in a position of power. Peter Dinklage has said multiple times that when he was first approached about doing Game of Thrones, he turned it down cold, not even bothering to read it because it was fantasy. And for someone of his stature, he thought he knew what kind of character it was going to be simply based on his stature. Then somebody got him to read it and he realized this was something completely different. Mm-hmm. That's huge for someone of that stature to see themselves represented in that way. And of course, how it changed how women were represented into fully fledged characters who were an integral part of this world while still staying true to the world. It didn't. Does that make sense when I say it stays true to the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It stays true to the tone of Westeros,
right.
But you still have women in a position of power and they are still realistic characters. I think that is such an amazing thing for the genre and for the cultural zeitgeist that this became.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm going to make a little comment on what you went back to sort of the beginning of your statement there. So, yes, in Westeros, women are pretty much, you know, they're the baby makers. They're, you know, mm-hmm. you get married. I mean, look at Catelyn Stark. You know, she was originally engaged to Ned's brother until he got killed. And then he went to Ned simply because
to Ned, yeah.
Yeah, that was the alliance that needed to be made.
Oh, now, and how casually they ally Sansa and Joffrey in mm-hmm. season 1 and like episode 2.
Yep. So, I mean, all of those things happen and all of those things are true, that this is a terrible society, and, you know, from a standpoint of how it treats women.
Mm-hmm.
It is. But I felt like the show didn't really glorify that at all. I think the people, you know, they showed the people who were kind of perpetuating that system were generally portrayed as bad people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tywin Lannister was not portrayed as a nice guy. Joffrey was not portrayed as a nice guy. You know, these people who were in charge like that, Peter Baelish, these were terrible people mm-hmm. who were in charge and perpetuating the system. You know, so I think it added something to the story as far as you realize this is terrible because there are terrible people in charge. So having that, the fact that women were treated terribly, I think it was, I don't want to say okay, because it's obviously not okay for him to be treated.
Right.
But I think it added something to the story simply because you realize that this is how this goes. This mm-hmm. is where the, you know, you talked about how, you know, fantasy is viewed. And fantasy is always meant to be a deconstruction of society and culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Star Trek may be one of the most prime examples mm-hmm. where he was specifically trying to do that. But ultimately,
he was making a social statement. Right,
so many of these, they kind of are. And, you know, here you look at, you know, they even look at our current politics and the cutthroat and the backstabbing and the lying that takes place. And I'm not even saying anything about, you know, which party you like, because honestly, they're both going to be guilty of it.
It's across the board.
You know, you can draw these parallels. And when you put that kind of terrible person in charge, terrible things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the lesson with the Starks? Ned Stark is, like you say, he's the noble guy. He is, you know, he's the good guy, so to speak, and he gets killed for it. Mm-hmm. You know, his own actions. And honestly, the good people often are on the losing end of things here. And I did some air quotes there, but nobody could see them. which I think is ultimately the story of Danny Ayers, because you see this good person is truly the bad person after all. And, you know, simply because she has the good story, she seems to have the right ideas. And then once she gets into that power ultimately corrupted her. You know, it's the old mm-hmm. shadow thing, power corrupts.
You kind of see it in season one, too, whenever she was pawned off to the Targaryens.
Mm-hmm. And or to the Dothraki. To Khal Drogo. Yeah.
And
she even says she doesn't want it. I mean, the show starts on a young girl being pawned off to a foreign king and then being raped on her wedding night. It does not start out kindly for women.
But you see her, like, start...
But yeah, that starts the ball rolling.
She wasn't particularly upset when her brother got killed.
Yeah, when it showed her brother being killed, she didn't, even though, was he really a Targaryen?
Yeah, yes, he was. Yeah, no, he was. Oh, okay. As much as she was.
Because she didn't, you kind of saw that like flicker, like that little spark.
But she had mm-hmm. the power now because she mm-hmm. was Khal's wife, as much as all that was
she
terrible.
She was Khaleesi, yeah.
Yeah, she, there was the beginnings of that corruption then. Mm-hmm. So, but that's my point as far as like, yes, it's a terrible portrayal of how women are treated in that society, but I think it just reinforces that that's bad. So that's why I'm okay with that being there, because,
it builds a truth to it, because mm-hmm. ultimately women are treated as badly and worse in this world, on this planet.
Yep.
This happens. And so it's fighting against that. It's setting it up for why these characters are the way they are. That's how it stays true to the world. It shows you this is the awful way that these women are treated, but then it lets them overcome their circumstances. It lets Sansa put Ramsay in that room with those dogs mm-hmm. and get ripped to pieces.
Right.
And never have I applauded a more horrible death.
And, you know, it's like even I'm going to go back to season 8. When I was talking to some people about this, some other people,
you're not allowed to have other friends. Yeah, don't be stupid.
they were mad that Arya was the one who saved the day.
A lot of people
during the night when
she
killed
the Night
King.
I have a certain finger for those people, which, but you can't see.
Which I thought it was amazing. Like, granted, as a whole, I just felt like season 8 was lazy and rushed. Even editing, you left stuff on the set. I'm going to wrap that up too because I forgot to say that. My God. Not once, but twice you forgot to take stuff off the set. You have a person that their job is supposed to be like, set is hot. It's like,
or you can CGI you that out it. If you catch it later.
They have now.
They have
They've
now.
They've both been CGI'd.
But if you
out.
DVR'd it, you have the original cut. I'm pointing to myself. So I don't know. I just thought, I get what you're saying. I love the fact that they started this whole story off as women are just
sex objects and baby makers
and have no rights. And
they're
then
pawns.
And then at the end of this, you're right. It was Arya who saved the day. It was Sansa who
the
queen of the North and the brains mm-hmm. to see
all the
destruction that's going to happen. And I don't know. I get what you're saying, and I applaud them for doing mm-hmm. that. I just wish they would have allotted themselves more time to build that story, because I think that's why a lot of people are like, that was BS, that was John's job. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. See, I'm glad that it wasn't.
So here's one, and I haven't discussed with this, Laura, so I'm going to be interested in hearing your response to what I'm about to say. Because, you know, there was some controversy over the scene where the Hound, Sandor Clegane, talks with Sansa, and they have their little moment there. And says something to the effect of where he's like, I'm sorry for the things that happened to you. And she says something to the effect of, I'm not, because if it hadn't, I'd still be that little bird. Basically, she's saying that, you know, I'm as strong as I am now. At least this is how I took it.
Mm-hmm.
That she's saying, I'm as strong as I am now because of those things that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were really upset because they thought that basically she was saying, nah, you know, rape's okay. And I don't feel like that was the statement she was making.
I don't understand how people jumped to that conclusion, because I took it the same way you did.
Yeah, I felt like she was saying that those things aren't going to define me, but my life did get me to here, and I'm happy where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I'm strong now, so I'm not going to spend time worrying about the horrible things that happened that got me here.
And she's also not asking for anybody to feel sorry for her. I think ultimately that statement is about Sansa not playing the victim. It's not okay what happened to her, and she's not claiming that it's okay, but she's not asking him to feel sorry for her exactly. because somebody took advantage of her.
Exactly. She's saying, I am strong enough now that it's fine. It's fine. And that's the way I took it, you know, because, you know, it was, I think, something for Sandor, because Sandor never apologized for anything. For him to actually, you know, say, hey, I'm sorry for the things that happened to you, I think that was a big moment for him. And then for her to turn around and basically say, you know what, it's not your fault. And because of all of that, I am stronger now. So you know what, I'm going to be the strength now. And I'm going to move on from that. And I think that's great, because I felt like, you know, because sometimes bad things do happen to people. You know, and I don't condone that. I don't want it to happen, but it does happen. And I always feel bad for the people who can't move past it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are things that you have to be able to move past. A bad thing did happen. I don't want it to. I wish we could all prevent those things. But if it did happen, you got to find a way to be stronger because of it and move on. You can't let that past hold you down, even if it was terrible. And I think that's what Sansa was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's what she was getting at there. I think this is just people nitpicking it entirely too much and saying, oh, then you're saying it's okay. Well, I don't think Sansa thinks it's okay.
Oh, no, I don't think she thinks it at all.
I spent an hour and 10 minutes nitpicking season 8. So, I mean, I get it, but I don't go into that detail of it. I didn't see that at all. Well, I know
it was a bit of a thing. All I'm saying is, if you think that Sansa thinks it's okay, can you imagine the first rapist that's brought before her court and how that's going to go for him?
Yeah.
Do you really think she's going to be like, you know what? Rape's okay. You're free.
Yeah. I'll send you to the wall. You're fine.
I doubt it's going to go down quite like that. My guess is there's going to be a few. Now, granted, she won't be able to just completely change everything overnight, because there are still a lot of men in power there. But my guess is you're going to see some progressive changes of what she can over time. So, yeah, you guys are taking a little too far. That's why I was kind of interested to see what your take on that, Lulu, was. Cause...
Yeah, I think that this show ultimately got it right. And I very much appreciate that. As a fan of the genre, it was refreshing to see. And I hope that it changes what we see in the future.
Yeah, I do. I think it's changed society and culture forever, and changed storytelling. And for that, it definitely deserves recognition.
Yeah,
I agree. What do you say, guys? You think our watch has ended?
I think our watch has ended.
All right. Peace out, y'all.